Hello and welcome to this episode of Demystified as we explore home cooking in a modern world. I'm Linda and I'm here with my friend Paul. Hey Paul, how are you?
Linda.
How's it going?
It's a Friday fun one.
It is a Friday fun one, so how are you? How was your week?
Yeah, I got caught up in...
Not a lot of cooking going on this week.
No, but I've got a plan. I just wasn't able to execute, but...
But, okay, a plan's a good thing.
Yeah. So there's a few things which I'm going to try, which I think is a bit weird, and the other one's something that I've been craving.
Oh, Snot
block.
No, and for our overseas listeners who aren't used to our slang, that's a vanilla slice, which is a kind of pastry and custard, vanilla-y custard delight.
Yeah.
Delight.
I can't say this word, colloquially.
Yes.
Is that right?
Well done.
No, it's not block.
Yes, but we don't like that.
I like that.
Yeah, I know you do. Such a 14-year-old sometimes. But thinking of planning is where I'd like to ask you a question. Yes, without notice. No, we're coming up to holiday season, Easter break, and for everyone in Australia, it's really, religious or not, it's a really good time to spend with friends, get away and have a break. For a lot of people. So, and as usual, I have overcommitted to myself in terms of my availability and the food capabilities and the food I can bring. So I was thinking, I've promised quite a few people that I would make hot cross buns.
Okay. Yes.
And then the lovely Brennan and Simone with their two little ones. And I thought, yes, you know, they'll be over late morning. It'll be a late morning.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. Brennan wants to come over about 9. And so, what, 9 in the morning? Okay. That's good for them with the little ones. So that's good. But my question to you then is, when I don't really want to get up at 4 to start making the buns.
No.
So is there can you make it to a point that and then put it in the fridge overnight to
– So half the beauty, I know when you're going, so you don't have to get up.
So I don't have to get up quite so early. And I want to involve the 2-year-old in helping me glaze them and be part of it.
Oh, right, okay.
So I want to have part of them, you know, finishing off cooking when they arrive.
Yeah.
To make him sort of feel, you know, part of it.
Part of the beauty of a hot cross bun recipe is that because of its moisture content and because the way you bake them and the ingredients and all the rest of them is that while, yes, they will go stale, they don't go as stale over a period of time. But in your scenario, what you're talking about is par baking, which is a very common commercial way of going about doing breads. So what you would see sometimes at supermarkets is you go into, and I'm just saying supermarkets because that's where you actually see it most, but you go into the bakery section and you've got a whole heap of fully baked, ready to go breads, baguettes, and all manner of different things. But if you hunt around enough, sometimes, and it used to be much more prevalent than what I see it now, and I'm going back like maybe 4 or 5 years, but what you would see is par-baked stuff. So what it is essentially it's been proved, rolled, and baked, but only about 30 to 40%. And then the idea being is that it would keep a little bit longer and you would take it home and finish the baking yourself.
Okay.
So to answer your question, yes, give it a go. Absolutely.
Well, I wasn't even thinking of par-baking.
I would.
Okay. Oh, well, that's then where we're going with it because I was thinking, could I make the dough to prove overnight in the fridge?
The problem that you're going to have with doing something like that is while in like sourdough world, right, yes, that's a really good technique, right, because it's much slower fermentation versus what active yeast does.
Mm-hmm.
So what you would find is even in a fridge, even though it's cold, but if you use our recipe, it's just, you know, instant yeast, right? It will overproof even in the fridge.
Okay.
So what you're better off doing is the day before, make the dough, prove it, and then I can't remember what the bake time is, but let's say I think it's about 22 minutes, maybe 25 minutes or something like that. I can't remember the total bake time. But I would halve it and then scrape off another couple of minutes. And so what you're doing is essentially you're setting the dough. It's set, but there's no color. The dough's kind of pretty much cooked on the inside, but you're not, it's not finished.
Okay. Yeah.
So probably half.
Minus a couple of minutes.
Maybe, like, depending on what the cook time is. If it's, let's say it's, I'm trying to remember, but let's say it's 22 minutes, right? I would do 10 minutes.
Okay.
And no glaze.
No glaze. No, no, yeah. that makes sense.
And then when they get there in the morning, well, just before they arrive or whatever, I know you probably want the kids to roll the dough.
Oh, no, no, I don't. No, no, because there'll be the Easter egg hunt.
Yeah, okay.
The chocolate hunt, which will be, is the most important treat.
And you think you're going to get them to get involved with something after chocolate?
No, no, that's the treat.
This is your own experience.
No, 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 no. The thing is, sit him on the bench, give him a pastry brush and let him glaze the buns while we put them back into the
hot.
Well, with support and,
yeah.
you know, with support and, I mean, we'd be there holding him on the bench anyway, making sure he doesn't do anything close to the heat.
Yeah.
And
how old's this child?
Oh, he's a super genius. So
oh, my God. Yes.
No,
so is my child.
Every child. Yeah. No, he's 2.5. He's 2.5 and wobbling a pastry brush if he wants to. Over the buns with some glaze.
I would parbake.
And then they go back into the oven, go and do the Easter egg hunt, and then there's a distraction from him wanting to just shove 3 kilos of chocolate into his mouth all at once by saying, we can't have any chocolate until we have a bun.
Yeah.
Because now they're ready. And he made them with me.
Well, I think there is absolutely.
It's a cunning plan.
Yeah.
I know, there are. Yes, but from it's
cooking,
a plan.
From a cooking perspective. I would try parbaking.
Okay. Absolutely.
And so what I would also do is let's say your first bake.
Yes.
Okay, so the bakes have just kind of set everything in the 10 or 11 minutes. Once that comes out of the oven, on a cake rack, let it cool completely. And when I say completely, it's got to be room temperature, cool. And then I would get a freezer bag. A large enough freezer bag that you can basically put the whole tray in, or a plastic shopping bag or whatever, and leave it in a plastic shopping bag outside, not in the fridge, just on the bench overnight.
Well, that's easy. Easier, because it will be not during the day I'll be doing this, because it'll be made after work.
Yeah. But just make sure there's no warmth to it when you put it in plastic, because it'll sweat.
Yeah.
And then everything will go a bit soggy. But give it a go. Even if it just starts to get a little bit of burnished color on top, that's okay, right? It doesn't matter too much. Okay. But, yeah, you just want to get it to the point where it's had its oven rise, okay? So when, as we know, with doughs, when initially they go into the oven, especially with steam, you get a dramatic lift, right? Once it's gone through that and maybe you're just starting to see a slight turning color, but it's like kind of got a bit of a, it's not a crust on top yet, but the surface is dry.
Mm-hmm.
If you're worried about the dough being cooked enough, just stick a skewer in it, like a cake
tester. Yeah.
And try parbaking. Parbaking is really good. So I used to do, when I was doing sort of bulk pastry cooking, we used to do a lot of parbake stuff, like a lot. And the bakers especially, so I was pastry cooking, but there was a whole bakery department. The bakers had it down pat, and it was a really, really good way to have fresh bread, but not because you just
you can do it with more. You can do it with everything.
Oh well, yeah,
basically, sort of.
I think the problem is like where do you store it?
Oh well, on a longer cook time, you'd need to have a longer cook time to make it worthwhile par baking, wouldn't you? Otherwise, it'd be quick cook time.
Yeah.
So what's the point?
So in your scenario, I would just stick to the time and the temperature of the recipe.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as we say, halve it.
Okay.
But what we might do is do a bit of digging into, okay, what does par baking look like? Because I think what we would find is maybe we would drop the temperature and halve the time.
Okay.
Right? Rather than two-thirds of the time or a third of the time. I think we would drop the temperature so it's fractionally lower.
Yes.
So you're not getting the color on top, but the dough's cooked for want of a better, almost cooked for want of a better term, and you're just doing the finishing off. I can't remember what the bakers used to do, but they had it like nutted. And it's a really good way to have bread in the house, but not have to
yeah,
dough from scratch and all the rest of it. So we might do some parve stuff. It's a
well, I think it's a good research idea. Because I don't need to know the final answer, Paul, until Thursday before I knock off.
I'm not doing this. I was thinking about doing, well, should we do no, a parve baguette recipe? A parve.
That's a good idea. No, that's a great idea. Yeah. But you can, I'm sure I can.
And I'm sure we could do parve hot cross bun.
But I will ask you about the hot cross bun recipe before Thursday, before I leave, to make sure I've got it done right. It's on the website, mate.
And in the cookbook, I think.
Yeah, no, I've got the, and which I have. Which I have.
Did you buy it?
Which I have one. Did you sign it? No. No, you didn't.
Well, what? You wrote it sort of as well.
Yeah, but. Anyway, we won't go there.
Cookbook's available, people, just so you know.
And it's in the new abridged version with all the converted temperatures and
further notes and explanations and all the rest of it. There's one other topic which probably I might say for next week that I wanted to bring up so you remember and I don't have to remember when we get to this
topic. Well, that's you know that's a danger, don't you?
Although next week's a Good Friday. So
we're going to be doing it on Thursday or Wednesday.
Well, Thursday.
Either way, that listeners don't need to know, we'll work that out later.
I was having a discussion with a few colleagues of mine about ambassadors, like brand ambassadors. So I work for a brand, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So brand ambassadors for appliance companies. And then the majority of them are generally chefs, right? I've had experience with.
Yes, well, we know.
Many and varied.
Yeah, exactly. Everywhere you go, there's a brand ambassador who's a chef.
Yes. And we got into quite a detailed conversation about it, and I'm not going to start here, but I'm interested in your thoughts or anyone else's thoughts. Is the celebrity rock star chef thing, because it became a thing, right? So chefs became celebrities for some unknown reason, right? So I don't know who started it, right? But it is a thing. The feeling that I'm getting with the inundation that we have is that I think it's actually dying a long, slow, and painful death. And so my question is what's the next thing? What's the next thing? Not necessarily for, like, appliance companies, but when the celebrity chef thing dies its death, because everything's cyclical, right? So we know that while there still be some that maintain, you know, the Jamie Olives of the world, probably the Gordon Ramsays, but all of the everything else, when that slows down, stops, right, what's next? What's going to entertain people to the same level? What's next?
I have no idea what's in the social kitchen for that, because there seems to be a lot of change away from, you know, I think we've all come through the last few years all around the world, and there's lots of talk about, given the world economy and the world inflation problems and I did notice that there's no brand ambassadors for accounting, but anyway. Yeah. but I did think there was a sort of a shift away from some material things into more sort of how do we want to live? What are we doing? How are we what can we grow in our economy in a way which is sustainable and not unsustainable? You know, the idea of just using resources ad infinitum hasn't really made anyone happy. There's a great chunk of our world population that's been left out of that growth. Yeah. And so I think from what I'm seeing, there's a real sort of interest now in sort of re-gauging where we are. We've got climate problems, we've got economic problems, we've got a whole range of social issues that every country that you tune into has got problems with people being isolated and lonely and the support not being out of there, and governments don't have enough money to do everything that they need to do for their people. So is there going to be some sort of shift? And who's an ambassador for that? You know, there's just a lot of scattergun approach from what I can see at the moment. But that's where I think the new chatter in everything is about that. So I don't, you're asking an accountant.
I have no
idea. I don't know what our listeners think, but you know, I think with food, what I'm seeing, and I have a different perspective on you.
Yeah.
But I see a lot more people, you know, learning how to go back to some basics.
Yeah,
a lot more of just different types of cooking, not fancy, but home.
Yeah, but I'm talking about, though, yeah.
Growth of growing things or getting to know your local community.
Yeah, but you say, do you remember?
All that, okay, more so of that, if we've started.
If we look at that as an example, right, so growing your own stuff and maintaining your own garden, you and I would both remember very well, and for those in Australia, some of you would too, but remember the huge thing that was the outdoors, right? Your garden. There was Don Burke, Jamie Jury. There was, you know, Better Homes and Gardens is still on. Like,
it's still like people talk about it all over the world, Costa.
Yeah. But there was an absolute influx and abundance of these lifestyle outdoor garden programs. And then now there's very minimal. And so the comparison I draw is,
I wonder if cooking the same will thing be
happening with cooking. And I wonder
what given, will replace it.
No, well, I've got a vague thought.
Okay.
But I wonder if
you might hear it first here, guys.
I wonder if it might end up being, and you'll always see chefs go out and they go to the farm and speak to the farmer and da da da. But I wonder if the new celebrities or the new rock stars or whoever you want to call it in the food world will become the sustainable producers.
So I think that's a really good idea. Yeah, absolutely.
How they go about it, how they,
you
know, whether it be someone growing cauliflower or someone with an aquaculture farm, like who knows, mm-hmm. right? But I wonder if they're the next ambassadors for food as a huge broad
spread. I hope so.
Yeah. Because I think really it gives everyone a different perspective, different understanding. Mm-hmm. Because, yes, a lot of the time you'll see these documentaries and chefs go out to the farms and they talk to the producer and, you know, you see Rick Stein putting on the stupid hat and going and making cheese. That's fine, right? But, you know, and I think probably someone like him, he will get some understanding of where the milk's come from. But I wonder if it's the milk producer now that is the next Rick Stein.
I hope so. I think that's a really good idea. I think it's, and you've heard it first here, folks, but I think it's a really good idea because that sort of leads into how we can do things differently.
Yeah.
Getting to know the products, getting to know what we're eating.
Yeah.
You know, getting to know where it's come from. And
because I think there's enough information out there now how to cook the product.
Yeah, and
right. So
and how has it been?
Whatever the ingredient is, like you can Google cauliflower and get 500 million hits on how to cook it, how to roast it, what to do with it. You know, there's enough information, right? But maybe the part that we don't appreciate as much is what does it take to grow a cauliflower?
Mm, exactly.
Right? Who does it better than anyone? What are the
Farming's an endlessly interesting subject, and one of the best radio programs on Australian radio is Countrywide, where they go across on the ABC. I know for those who we have a station called ABC, and it is the government-funded radio program, but they go Australia-wide. And they talk to farmers doing all sorts of trialing, all sorts of techniques. Trialing all sorts of ways of farming, and it's so interesting to listen to how an individual farmer doing whatever it is making headway through land conservation, soil conservation, dirt conservation. We have great soil problems in this country with so much dry, arid nature blowing around. We lose an enormous amount of soil in our country, and
listen to you, you're the soil expert. Right?
No, I'm not annoyed. No, not at all. But I certainly listen to Countrywide.
Yeah.
And but it is something that when you listen.
Very, like, that's a niche program.
But that's
that's the thing.
But it does show that this show has been going forever.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But it's wonderful to see this. And you think, well, why isn't that maybe, you know, more of that on telly because there's so much information. Yeah. The farming industry in Australia is absolutely amazing.
It doesn't just have to be farming.
No, no, but the whole agricultural, you know, the whole agricultural sector and some of the innovators, some of the innovation that's coming from that sector is amazing. And you're right, I think it's where a lot of interests are because it does link into all the other things that we have about water, about climate change, about sustainability. So there you are. We've heard it first.
Probably wrong.
Well, we'll see. Time will tell, won't it? And, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, I just think it'd be nice to not see so many chefs on TV.
Well, and also the recycling products, which I'm finding interesting. I have a new raincoat that's from recycled plastic bottles, and I've got a pair. I've got some shoes that were from I've got a recycled jacket from Zerali from recycled materials as well, and I think that's fantastic that we're finding uses for some of the product that is otherwise just causing such a problem for our community.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't buy a lot of sneakers. I'm not one of those sneaker freaks, but the only sneakers I do buy these days are from recycled materials.
Yeah, and so that's an interesting.
And I'm not like a hippie.
No, like, you certainly aren't.
I still have leather shoes, but
you aren't.
Like I do have. No. I do go. Oh yeah, you know, look, why not? Like, why not? And they're much lighter. They're easier.
But you actually feel better buying them. And so I think I do. I feel great when I see them.
You're easily influenced.
I am totally, and I'm the first to admit that. But I thought, this is great. What a great product, and how clever it is to do so many different products from their brand out of recycled material.
Yeah. But yeah, I say go the interest in agriculture, farming, and aquaculture.
Those should
be our next celebrity chefs, I reckon.
Well, let's see what we can do to raise it.
Yeah. So there you go. Huge listener base out there. Thanks for listening.
And
two of you.
You are terrible. No, it's way more than that. So thank you, everyone, for listening.
Good weekend.
Have a great weekend and happy cooking. Till next time. See everybody. Later. Bye. Thanks for listening to this podcast as we explore home cooking in a modern world. We'd love you to subscribe, and for more information, please go to our website, cookingwithsteam.com.